Welcome to the Foresight Health Roundup podcast, Foresight Health's podcast series for healthcare revolutionaries. Outcomes matter, customers count, and value rules. Hello again, everyone. This is Dave Berta, news editor at Foresight Health. It is Thursday, June 4th. Today, of all days, is National Hug Your Cat Day. Seriously. That's very funny to me because I've been checking on my sister's two cats all week while she's been out of town on business. Their names are Tiki and Mai Tai. After more than 10 years, I still don't know which one is which, but they're good cats. My sister loves them, so I'm happy to take care of them while she's away. And to be honest, I did not hug them. But they were all over me after I fed them and refilled their water bowls, so they're happy, I'm happy. And I don't clean the kitty litter. A lot of people say cats and dogs are good for your mental health. You can talk to them and tell them anything, and they will listen without judgment and love you unconditionally no matter what. But what if you don't have a cat or a dog? Who do you talk with? A new study is out this week that says a lot of adolescents and young adults are talking about their mental health to AI chatbots. The study, published in the journal JAMA Pediatrics, is based on a representative sample of 1,009 people ages 12 through 21. Here's what the survey found. 19.2% said they've used an AI chatbot for mental health advice. Of those who did, 42.8% did so at least monthly. And 91.7% rated the chatbot's mental health advice as somewhat or very helpful. And here's the part that bothered me. 63.3% said they had not disclosed using an AI chatbot for mental health advice to anyone. So nearly two-thirds are keeping it a secret. And only 21.1% said they discussed their mental health with a physician in the prior 6 months. So only about one-fifth actually talked to a human. The study didn't say anything about talking to cats. But we did talk about consumers' increasing use of AI chatbots for both mental and physical health and what it all means for the healthcare system on our April 9th, 2026 episode of the Roundup, Competitor, Collaborator, or Replacement, with Dave Johnson, founder and CEO of Foresight Health, and Julie Murchison, partner at Transformation Capital. So let's listen again to what they had to say on this special rebroadcast of our April 9th episode. As someone who's been falsely accused of being a hypochondriac, I have looked up my medical symptoms online, like you haven't, but I've never asked AI to diagnose and treat me, at least not yet. But I soon may be in the minority based on two new reports. The first is Rock Health's 11th Annual Consumer Adoption of Digital Health Survey. The second is KFF's Tracking Poll on Health Information and Trust. Together, they give us a snapshot of how consumers are using the latest digital health tech. Let me give you the highlights from each report, and you tell me what it all means. This is from the Brock Health Report, which is based on a survey of 8,000 U.S. adults. 32% said they used an AI chatbot for health information last year. That's up from 16% in 2024, or double in a year's time. The top three reasons were to explore treatment options based on a diagnosis, search for a diagnosis based on symptoms, and research prescribed drugs and or their side effects. Ask what they did after using a chatbot. The top three actions were search for more information, consult a provider, and discuss what they found with family or friends. This is from the KFF report, which is based on a survey of about 1,300 U.S. adults. 32% said they used an AI chatbot to get health information on their physical or mental health over the past year. That's the same percentage as the Rock Health survey. Of those who used an AI chatbot for physical health, the most common reason was looking up symptoms or getting general information about their condition. Same with those who used an AI chatbot for mental health or emotional well-being purposes. Interestingly, 58% of those who used an AI chatbot for mental health reasons did not follow up with a doctor or other health professional. That's compared with only 42% of those who used an AI chatbot for physical health reasons. Dave, what's your big takeaway from these two new reports? Did any other stat jump out at you about consumer behavior? And if I'm a provider, what's my big takeaway from these reports?
Well, the big takeaway is that the healthcare bots are here and here to stay. We've moved beyond robot boyfriends and girlfriends to robot doctors. My advice to providers is learn to live with them and even work with them. More on that later. But in terms of the stats and so on, I really liked the Rock report a lot. The one from Kaiser, to me, was more supportive than illuminating. And besides, the Rock report had such a great title, The Tortoise and the Hare of Care. And what they're getting at in the title is that inside the healthcare system, the use of AI to diagnose and develop care plans and so on is progressing at a snail's pace or a tortoise's pace, very deliberate, want to make sure it works. And meanwhile, out in the Wild West with consumers, it's just going faster than the fastest hare you can imagine. I mean, double the use of chatbots for healthcare from a year ago, probably will double again this year. In terms of stats from that report in particular that struck me, I really liked their deep dive on the super users. It turns out that of the 32% that are doing this, 64% of those people are using the health chat bots weekly. They engage weekly with their healthcare bot. Rock termed them as healthcare super users. They are consumers who use more care, generate more data, and track more of their health across medical and wellness domains. It almost sounds like it's potentially addictive.
That's interesting. You know, it's like people take their blood pressure all the time, right? Constantly. Yeah.
I mean, I'm sort of thinking about what happened with sports betting and how that's become just immersed into our society. Could we be looking at something similar for a fairly substantial segment of society? But the ones that are using it are really using it. And the other thing that I found particularly illuminating, particularly since it supports one of the conclusions Paul and I came to in our book. You know, what the behavioral psychologists tell you, we always pay more attention to confirming rather than disagreeing information. But the super users, in fact, all users, aren't differentiating between clinical and administrative questions. They're going to the chatbot for both. And that just makes the case for me that we're ultimately going to see an aggregator's advantage, one single engagement point for the entire healthcare journey, both the care side and the administrative side. So I think the marketplace is confirming what I guess many of us believe to be true, maybe already knew to be true, which is whoever can put it all in one place and make it easy to access and use is going to win. I'm going to end with a quote from Kristen Valdez, founder and CEO of Be Well Connected Health, who might be the single smartest person I know on health data and consumer engagement.
100%.
You agree? Yeah, I couldn't agree more. So anyway, quote from Kristen saying, patients are not going to stop using their tools because they're filling a real gap. Even though AI isn't perfect, medical error isn't zero either. She's right about that. Humans are imperfect. The real question is whether this represents an incremental step forward. We have an obligation to make the technology better and to do so in a responsible, thoughtful way, which she is doing. Others are doing too. And so it's here. It's growing fast. And I think Kristen's right. You know, I love that quote from Yates that with dreams come responsibility. Well, this is a big dream, right? To be able to use chatbots to help diagnose and treat illness and also guide our health and wellness journey. We have a responsibility. That's a big dream. We have a responsibility to make it work.
Thanks, Dave. Julie, any questions for Dave?
Okay, Dave, this is a softball, but I want you to think hard about it. If 1 in 3 adults are already using AI as their first stop for health advice, and up to half have never followed up with a clinician, does the physician of tomorrow become a gatekeeper or a second opinion master or something else?
Boy, if you could see me now, Julie, this is me thinking hard. I look like Dobie Gillis, you know, with my fist on my chin, you know, in the Rodin.
The thinker.
Yeah, exactly. You got that one right away.
I know where you're going.
Only 2% of the audience know who Dobie Gillis is. But anyway, I vote for something else, Julie. And again, this is me thinking very hard, or maybe not so hard. I believe the doctor of the future is going to be a collaborator. Somebody will work together with consumers and the machines to diagnose, treat, and develop care plans. I think a John Halamka's quote from his book, Transform, on the Mayo platform, where he said, the machines won't replace the doctors, but doctors who know how to work with the machines will replace doctors who don't. And, you know, imagine a world where you and your doctor together came up with the prompts to talk to the machine and then, you know, put it into English or whatever language the patient speaks, and then act on that information together, you as the consumer slash patient, bringing your own expertise and knowledge of your body with the physician and combining that expertise to generate better solutions. So I vote for collaborator.
Very interesting. Thanks, Dave. Okay, Julie, did anything surprise you in these two reports? Did another stat jump out at you about consumers' digital health behavior? And if I'm a digital health startup or health tech company, what's my big takeaway?
Well, I'm with Dave on the Rock Health Report. I was struck by how AI health has effectively gone mainstream within a single year. And, you know, these percentages are now approaching the percentage of those who use social media for health in general. So that's pretty major. I was actually pretty struck by the fact that these tools aren't just for the privileged today, right? It's solving access and affordability issues in a pretty major way. And unlike wearables and telehealth and all the things that we've, you know, we've seen over the last 5 to 7 years try to get traction, AI health isn't showing meaningful differences by income or education, suggesting that it's, you know, pretty unusually broad access across socioeconomic strata. So that's major, if that's actually really true. And, you know, the other thing I think is interesting is that they say the stats were something like 1 in 5 or so say a major reason they used AI is not being able to afford a clinician visit or not having or getting an appointment. And if you look at just the, I think those were around 20%, each of those reasons. And if you look at the younger, lower income adults, that rises pretty quickly to 30 to 40%. So the kids are going to change it. That's all I'm going to say here. And the last thing, Dave, I don't think you mentioned this, but it was really close to something that you did mention, which is a large share of these AI health users are not looping clinicians at all. And they're feeding their records in despite privacy concerns. So, you know, it's amazing to me that, you know, we're starting to see just absolute independent action in ways that, you know, people are making choices about utility over privacy, which I think is interesting. So what would I do if I'm a digital health startup? So many things that are product opportunities here. It's kind of amazing. First, now it seems AI really is a real front door, perhaps, compared to where we've been over the last decade. And I'd be building for an AI first patient and not an EHR first patient. How's that for a little bit of a twist?
I like it.
Thank you. So, you know, I think the first product opportunity is you should assume that your patient's arriving AI informed. So in workflows and UX and clinician experience, we have to assume that we're routing AI generated questions and ingesting data in ways that we're really embracing it and not ignoring that reality. Second, given this affordability and access finding, it feels to me like there's a product opportunity to turn AI advice into safe, you know, lower friction next steps, like obviously chat to visit routing and lower cost async care models or even group visits, right? You can imagine lower cost models that can pair similar cohorts of people. We're already seeing nudges, of course, but if you have lower income, younger, uninsured, Black and Hispanic adults disproportionately using AI because they can't afford or access care, you have a market, right? That's an entirely different market than what I think many digital health startups think about today. And lastly, I'll say the super user that you mentioned, Dave.
Yeah.
It's amazing. I mean, what they were saying about the super users, just tracking more metrics, especially lifestyle metrics, makes a huge difference. So you have to think about that as your core customer now, right? Designing longitudinal AI augmented experiences with coaching, navigation, interpretation. You know, think about that as rewarding their behavior in the ways that you talked about, Dave, and keeping them in your ecosystem, not just some sort of single AI chat. There's a lot of opportunity.
Yeah. So we've gone from being worried about the digital divide now to it being a great equalizer in terms of disparities and equity.
Huh. Nicely put.
Sounds like it.
No, that's great. Thanks, Julie. Dave, any questions for Julie?
Well, Julie, in the great match fight between physicians and machines, in your humble but very well-informed opinion, when given an equivalent set of symptoms and patient profile information, do the machines or the doctors diagnose conditions more accurately?
Ooh.
Got to make some enemies of some physicians out there. No, I think, you know, we'd all like to think that AI is going to be more accurate because it will have access to broader data sets, be more personalized. And I think for the most part, that will increasingly be true. Today, there are probably several nuances that are not captured well in data that are more complex than your typical kind of straightforward diagnosis. So we're probably in a pretty major in-between stage where doctors' diagnoses can still be quite powerful in certain conditions, populations, you know, complexity. But I think we're seeing AI already do better on, you know, medical exams and other things. So we're headed the AI way.
Well, I think evidence-based and science-based AI chatbots can level the playing field between patients and providers. And the best providers should embrace well-informed patients, just like the best businesses welcome educated consumers. So that's the future, but we're only one third of the way there, but I think we'll get there pretty quickly. Okay, we're back to June 4th and I'm still here. So are Tiki and Mai Tai. My sister will be very happy I kept them alive. And thank you for listening to this special rebroadcast of our April 9th, 2026 podcast, Competitor, Collaborator, or Replacement. That is all the time we have for today. If you'd like to learn more about the topics we discussed on today's show, please visit our website at foresighthealth.com. You also can subscribe to the Roundup on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. Don't miss another segment of the best 20 minutes in healthcare. Thanks for listening. I'm Dave Berta for Foresight Health.